All right, so anybody want to tell me what this class this quarter is about in here? Say that again? I'm sorry. All right, oh, that's right, yes, Jesus, the correct answer. I'm sorry, yes. That is correct. That, in fact, in some ways, even more correct than usual here, because the real theme of this class is Christ-likeness. That's what this class is about. Because of our theme this year, which comes from the end of Colossians 1, where Paul says that the mystery of God, God's purpose is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Christ in you, Christ-likeness, being like Christ. And so then the way this class began is, first of all, we had kind of an overview of that verse and to set the stage for that theme. And then we talked about the fact that in order for us to become like Christ, first, Christ did what? He became like us. That's right. Christ came. The Word became flesh. He took on himself humanity so that he could experience the things I just prayed about. He experienced the effort to tempt him to sin. He experienced even death itself. But because he became like one of us, he could tackle those things and defeat those things and conquer those things. And then we talked about the fact that the way that we are converted to Christ is we become like him, first of all, in his death and in his resurrection. What would you say is a classic passage in the New Testament that talks about the idea of us becoming like Christ in his death and resurrection? So I'm seeing how this went, Ed, here. So there you go. That's exactly right. Bailing Ed out of here. He was about to get distraught. That's right. So Romans chapter 6, that's right, which talks about, do you not know that all of us who've been baptized into Christ have been baptized into his death? And therefore, as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in newness of life. So we are united with Christ, so we share his death and we share his resurrection. His story then sort of becomes ours. And so Christ became like us. To be converted to him, we become like him. And then that's what Christ-likeness is really all about, learning how to live like Christ. And then in Sunday morning's class, which Dean taught, Dean talked about one very specific aspect of how Jesus went about things as an example for us to consider. Do you remember what Dean talked about? What did he talk about Jesus? Social. Yeah, that Jesus was social. And what was the idea behind that lesson? What was Dean talking about when he said that Jesus was social? Yeah, that's exactly right. That Jesus was not, in an ivory tower separated from everybody else, but that he was out and about. He would talk to people. You know, I'm not like Jesus in that way. I mean, I like to talk, but like when I travel, like if I'm on a plane, as soon as I sit down, I open a book. And even if I'm not really reading it, I fake like I am so the person won't bother me. Because sometimes I just want to be left alone, you know. I can't imagine Jesus doing that, though, right? He goes, sits down at the well, and starts up conversation, right? You just get the sense that he was always looking for opportunities, like with the woman at the well. And then also the banquets he would attend that drew the ire of the Pharisees and scribes. So yes, that was a good way to illustrate a specific aspect of what Jesus was like. And, of course, Jesus is unique in that he's the Son of God as well. He's the sinless Son of God. And we have to be careful, we have to be cautious that in our effort to connect with the world, that we're the ones influencing the world is not influencing us. So we always have to be on guard about that. But with that, important caveat in place, yeah, that was a great lesson to illustrate something specific about Jesus. All right. So now what we're going to talk about tonight is a command, or you might say an invitation, that Jesus gives a lot. And I want you to just think with me about what this means exactly. So there's a lot of places we could turn to illustrate this because he gives it a lot. But why don't we do this? Let's turn to the Gospel of John. Man, I've really fallen behind now. I'm not sure when we're going to get through the Gospel of John here. We got to pick the pieces back up after our meeting. But look in John chapter 1 and verse 43. John chapter 1, verse 43. The text says, "The next day Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him," what does he say to Philip? "Follow me." Now, it's interesting. I did one of my, you know, very in-depth, super complicated Bible studies today. I looked up the word follow in the Gospels, right? Just punched it in the computer, and it spit them out. And it was really quite interesting how often Jesus says this to people. It encourages them to follow him. The other thing that you see a lot is, many times in the Gospels, and if you think about it, you realize there's a lot of statements like a great multitude followed him, great crowds followed him, the people followed him. But particularly this invitation by Jesus, follow me. All right, so here's what I want to think about tonight. And this is when I wish we had a chalkboard or a whiteboard. Can we make sure in the new setup here I have something I can write on here? All right, old school. So here's what I want to do tonight. I want you all to think about. Yeah, I know you newfangled teachers, you can do it on your iPad, right? That's past my abilities here. So I want you to just think about, what was Jesus asking people to do exactly? When he would say to them, follow me, what would be involved in that? So if we had a chalkboard or a whiteboard, you'd give me the ideas and we would just kind of list them up here. And I made a list, but I don't want to just tell you what I was thinking about. I want you to tell me, what do you think is involved in this invitation when Jesus tells people to follow him? All right, so to learn from him. So imagine writing on the board here, to learn from him. Then I heard somebody say, imitate him. Okay, I like that a lot. What else can you think of? All right, change directions. I like that. Become a part of a band of followers. All right. What else can you think of? Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good point Ralph makes. It's kind of like, when you give wedding vows. And, like the language from Genesis, right? To leave and to cleave, all right? So to enter into that new relationship, following in that new relationship, also actually suggests or implies there is a leaving of something else. That's right. And I think that definitely has to go into the mix. All right, so we had learn, imitate, become part of a band of, a change in direction. Yeah, Mickey?
I was just going to say a disciple, someone that would
be with him. Very good. Now, Mickey here, he's just spilling the beans, all right? Because that's actually what the next lesson will be. And this lesson is the segue or the transition to that. But of course, the technical term for a person who is a follower in the sense of all of these things you've talked about is to be a disciple. So that's the other word search I've done, is look up the word disciple, right? But before you use that word, though, you can just think of it as all these nuances, all of these different things, and what it means to be follow. Oh, look at this, the crack staff right here. I mean, they're not even waiting. We don't have to wait till the new building comes. Where did this thing come from? Have we had it all this time? He scrambled out to the store in the last 5 seconds. Now, is there anything? Oh, look at this. Now, here's, yes, Amazon. He did Amazon drone, just brought it in here. No, that's right. So you always got to watch here that you're not using a permanent marker. That's a trick here. That's right. Very good. All right, so we had the idea of learn, imitate, change direction, band, become like a band, because he invites more than just one person to do this, sacrifice, and of course, really, what we're all getting right here is to be a disciple. That's really what this all is actually boiling down to. We just haven't used the word yet, all right? So what I want to do now, let me see what I had here. It's interesting, Leah, now you and I are really on the same wavelength because that was the first thing I listed, actually, direction. Like, you're going this way, hey, follow me, go this way here. So I had direction, instruction, example, loyalty. I had loyalty here, and I think that's probably part of what Pat meant when you were talking about there's sort of a band here. There's a loyalty involved here. And I think it was probably also what Ralph had in mind, because if you're going to be loyal to Jesus, that means you're also sacrificing other potential loyalties because you're going to turn and to follow him. Then the only other thing that I had listed that I was kind of thinking of, and really, when you get right down to it, these are all ways of saying the same thing, just from different angles. The only thing I could think of is kind of like when like somebody has a potluck. Let's say, you know, Carl and Martha were going to go out to the Sugar Shack Sunday after morning worship, and some of our new college kids, they may have never been there before, and so you may say, well, follow me, all right? And what that has to do with is taking someone to a particular destination. But on the other hand, the way that you can think about that is you're simply giving them guidance, right? Which is another way of talking about teaching and learning. So like it's what I'm saying here, all of these things, they're really the same sort of idea. It's just you're looking at it from different angles. So what I did then is I just picked out some representative passages that illustrate the very things that you guys have just brought up. All right? So let's start with, look over in John chapter 8, since we're still here in the Gospel of John. John chapter 8. This is where we, last time I've preached was from here. We finished the 8th chapter. But remember that Jesus, in John 8, he's in the city during the Feast of Booths. And during the Feast of Booths, there are these ceremonies that go on in the temple that are not actually described in the Old Testament. They were traditions that the Jews had kind of layered on. And one of those traditions was lighting up these huge lamps in the courtyard of the temple to remind the people of the light, the pillar that guided the people, the pillar of light during the wilderness wandering. And it's in the middle of the feast that in John 8 and verse 12, Jesus says what? I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. So how many of you are like me, and the most important app on your phone is the flashlight app, right? The middle of the night, bing, because that's what I got to have to get through. I look like one of those hobbits, right? Because they have that light thing, you know, they go traipsing through. So Jesus says, I'm the light of the world, and if you follow me, you won't be in the darkness. So he's giving guidance, shedding light on a path or a destination. And then, of course, part of the way he does that is by giving them instruction about the way to go. But that's one idea here where Jesus says, follow me, because he's like the one, you know, like if you're into those movies, Gandalf, you know, and he's got that staff. And he's kind of giving the light that kind of directs everybody else. And then you just follow in behind him, and he can help you get to your destination. And then look over in Matthew chapter 4. Here's another follow me passage. We all know this one. You might not know the verse, the chapter and verse number, but you know the language here. Matthew 4 and verse 18. Jesus sees Simon and Andrew, fishermen, and what does he say to them in verse 19? Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And what's interesting is here, he's obviously saying, I'm going to teach you a skill. You're going to learn something from me. You come and you follow me, and you're going to learn that just like you're fishing for a fish, I'm going to teach you and show you how you can fish for people. And so verse 20 says, immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. And he called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Now, again, think about all of these different nuances here. Certainly, it's a big change in direction, right? I mean, they're leaving, at least temporarily. They are leaving their way of making a living. You know, imagine somebody shows up at your job one day and says, imagine, Mike, when you were out there shrimping back in the old days, and somebody says, hey, we're going to go fish for men, and you just kind of pick up and take off. So that's definitely a change in direction. It's also a certain sacrifice. And there's a destination of all, because Jesus is going to take them somewhere to show them how to do this, right? Which really, if you think about it, is just through all the travels of his earthly ministry. And of course, really, what's going on here is exactly like what Dean talked about on Sunday's class, which is, what better way to learn how to fish for men than to watch Jesus in action? You know, watch him with the woman at the well of Samaria. Watch him with the other people that Jesus interacts with, and learn from him. So again, all of these ideas, and of course, if they're going to follow Jesus and leave their father's business, then there's a certain sense in which there's loyalty is changing now as well. So you can kind of see all these different nuances kind of play together here. Yeah. Yeah, so Justin's asking a really good question, which I've puzzled over a lot, which is, it's kind of hard to imagine, somebody walks into Amy's elementary school class and says, hey, follow me and I'll make, well, actually, you might be just glad to get out of there. I don't know. Maybe that was a bad illustration for the teachers here. Maybe I should use something else. But it is kind of bizarre, right, to imagine that people just like that. So I think we have to assume, which is really not an assumption, we know the gospel accounts are very economical, right? There could be a lot more detail. Remember, John says at the end, if I wrote everything I could have written, there wouldn't be enough books to contain it all. So we understand that in any of these given accounts, there's probably much more going on here. Because the one that always gets me is Levi, Matthew, when Jesus calls him. So there's probably more going on here. But also, we know from the Gospels Jesus' reputation, as soon as he begins his public ministry, it begins to just, explode. So you can also imagine people are kind of starting to hear about him. And of course, we just have to remember also how compelling he is, right? That he can call people and people who respond to him. So I think it's probably actually a mix of all of those different things. The other thing also to consider is, I've pointed this out some in the Gospel of John, we shouldn't imagine that the first time Jesus says something to a person, they are automatically fully 100% a disciple in the sense that we think. Remember, in the Gospel of John, we've seen levels of faith deepen with people, even with the disciples themselves. Even after Jesus called them in chapter 1, after he performs the miracle at the wedding feast in chapter 2, it says they believed in him. Well, wait, I thought they already believed, though. They're following him. Well, yeah, but it's getting deeper, Like all of us, we experience that in life as well. So, yeah, there's probably a lot of layers going on here about that. That's right. That was the end of that. I imagine they reacted to that like any child would react today if somebody gives them, celery instead of candy. That's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. There's no more of that going on. So, all right. Well, let's look at some other passages here. And again, they're really kind of all interconnected with each other. Look at Matthew 11. Now, this doesn't use the word follow, but it uses the verb that you would use to invite someone to follow you in what we call the great invitation. So Matthew, we sing this, right? Matthew 11, 28. What does Jesus invite them to do? Come. So that's just the flip side of saying follow. Come. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. So this would be the angle of following Jesus in order to learn from him, which we already saw is suggested by, hey, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. So he's going to teach them something. They're going to learn something. But then here Jesus just simply makes that even more explicit. Let me show you another passage, because remember, it's not just Jesus who can invite people to follow him. There's another way we follow Jesus. So think about this passage over in 2 Timothy chapter 1. 2 Timothy chapter 1. And someone read verse 13 for us. 2 Timothy 1, verse 13. Yeah. So on the one hand, they're following, Paul says to Timothy, follow my words. 2 Timothy 1:13, you know, follow the pattern of sound words you've heard from me. But then ultimately, who would Timothy be following? Yeah, ultimately following Christ. There's actually several times in Paul's letters where he says something like this. So that's the other way that we follow Jesus, is by following the apostolic instruction, which is given through and by the authority of Jesus. That's the other way that we kind of follow him and learn from him. Yeah, Jim?
I was reading Peter Schein or somebody that said that the disciples asked, where is your house? And it was common for somebody that wanted a disciple or a teacher to have them actually come over and live with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, certainly, you know, the idea of that kind of close proximity, I guess we could say on the one hand, it doesn't appear as if Jesus was a property owner. You know, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head, although people would provide generously for him to have a place. But I think in practice, it probably ended up washing out to be about the same, because they did spend, you know, so much time with him, maybe not in his house per se, but certainly a lot of time to learn from him. By the way, I've asked Reagan, and he has agreed, when all the family leaves, just to kind of help me for a little bit, to kind of deal with the transition, to kind of come and hang out, stay at the house for a little while. So, you know, just imagine. I mean, you could really come and, like, imitate me now and start learning from me. And I mean, I'm trying to think of all the fantastic things, you know, you might... That's right. Amy's going, oh, let's ixnay this right now here. Cut this bit. You know, you might become a big Kentucky basketball fan and learn to sing Barbershop and all the other things I can do, which that's it right there. So, all right. But yeah, no, I think that's probably in practical terms, Jim, I think that's probably what was happening. Just doesn't seem like he really had property. His mother did, so maybe they did it like that. All right, let's look here at another passage. Again, same idea here. Look over in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. Now, just to kind of preview where we're going, we're going to do this lesson tonight on following Jesus. The next lesson, then, we're going to talk about the disciple passages, the passages that specifically talk about discipleship. And then I think, I got to look at my schedule here. I think then pretty much after we do that, what we're going to do is we're simply going to pick out specific things the New Testament points to that we're supposed to be like Jesus in. And this is going to be one of those passages here. That's more or less what's going to happen here. So we're going to come back to this passage in the future. So what's going on here in Peter's letter is, you remember in Colossians, which we just finished, how there's a section that deals with the household. So there are instructions for the wife, instructions for the husband, children, parents, and then slaves and masters. Well, that's the same thing here in Peter, and the instructions here at the end of 1 Peter 2 are with regard to servants. And we'll look at that here in just a second. Yeah, Dave? Yes. No, I think. No, I think you're right. We were when Justin made his comment. I was definitely thinking that. Certainly, there was something very compelling about Jesus, and I think an aura, a special leadership. What the Old Testament would say, because it's the language that's used of the great judges and kings, is the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And that's what the Bible says, that Jesus' baptism, the Spirit was anointed him. And that would be another way to think about it, right? But I think you're absolutely correct. There was something, unique and special about Jesus that has to factor in to all of these accounts where people just suddenly seem like they're willing to just turn everything over for him. Yeah, Nikki? Yeah, yeah. It wasn't automatic, and I think that was what Justin was getting at when he said, you know, however compelling he was, there's also the story at the end of John 6 where as soon as he teaches something that people don't like, they just say, we're out of here, you know. So we have to, all of these factors certainly have to go into the equation. All right, so look at this language here at the end of 1 Peter chapter 2. You can see verse 18 where the instruction starts to servants. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect. And then in verse 21, for to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his footsteps. And this would be the idea of imitation. But of course, in that imitation, you are learning, here's what Jesus did, and you are changing from your own self-centered direction to then living like him, in loyalty to him, and in this case here, even if that means facing a sacrifice, like Jesus did when he suffered. And that's what the servants here are being called to do as well. So we're going to look at a lot of passages like this one, which basically say, here's what Jesus did, now you do that. So I spent a lot of time earlier this summer looking up just as Christ, like Christ, as him. There's a lot of ways to do this. I'm sure I left out a bunch of them, but I wrote down as many as I could. But they're all passages directing us to imitating Jesus in one way or another, specific qualities that it calls us to. All right, here's another passage we all know. It's in Matthew 16, Mark 10, parallel in Luke. Caesarea Philippi, who do men say that I am? And what are some of the answers? You know, one of the prophets. You know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, John the Baptist, one of the prophets. Who do you say that I am? Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus says, fantastic, great answer. Flesh and blood hasn't revealed this. You didn't just figure this out on your own. You are listening. You've seen revelation from God to come to that conclusion. And the Son of Man is going to be taken by the hands of the chief priests and delivered up and put to death, be raised on the third day. And then Peter says, Lord, that'll never happen to you. God forbid. That's not going to happen. And then Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan, right? And then Jesus says, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now, when you put that whole passage together there in Matthew 16 and Mark 10, there's a certain destination, it seems to me, that Jesus has in mind when he says, and follow me. Because remember, what did he just say was going to happen to him? He's going to die. And then he says, if you want to follow me, you take up your cross and follow me. Deny yourself. Now, that doesn't mean that every Christian, obviously, is going to be a martyr. Every Christian is going to give their life for the Lord. But what does it mean, would you say? It is that sense of, that's right, that sense of sacrifice to loyalty to follow Jesus. And that's part of what I had in mind when I used the idea of destination here. Just think about what the destination that Jesus was just talking about when he issues the instruction, take up your cross and follow me. And I think that in our culture, now the other term for this is discipleship. That's what we're going to talk about next. But I think in our culture, we have absolutely, just in the religious culture generally, we've lost sight of what Jesus was saying here. Because we've all heard people say this in one reason or for one circumstance or another. But people will say things like, I just can't believe God would expect me to sacrifice X, Y, or Z. So therefore, I'll do X, Y, or Z. Well, where would you get such an idea? Because what Jesus says is, if you're going to follow me, you need to know where I'm headed right now. And you need to get your cross because that's where we're all going here. We're headed to the cross, at least in the sense of what you all just said, at least in the sense of the willingness to sacrifice and give everything for the sake of following him. So it's just a vital component here. Now, is that the ultimate destination of Jesus? No. Remember our theme this year, Christ in you, the hope of glory. His ultimate destination is not the cross, it's the resurrection. And that will be ours as well. So don't forget that, but we just got to realize that is the path. That's what the GPS says. Here's where you got to go to get to where you want to go. Yeah, Brother John. Yes.
There were three parts, after they went through the discussion. Take, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. That's a commitment and some real change of direction for him.
That's great, John. I've got those passages listed on my sheet. We're just not going to have time. And we'll be able to loop back and pick that up. But yeah, rich young ruler, classic example. John just, did you notice? He just weaved those all together. Did you see that? There, that's exactly right. And then, do you remember, immediately after that, Peter says, Lord, we left everything to follow you. And then Jesus says, the one who has left father, mother, brother, sister, home, for me, will receive many times more in this life and in the age to come, eternal life. I love that passage. Because what he's saying is, okay, Peter, I know you've had to sacrifice. But paradoxically, sacrifice is the way to having more than you could have ever imagined. So long as you understand it's going to be through Christ that you receive that. I mean, we have lived that over the past 2 weeks. I mean, I just can't even begin to tell you how many families, how much of a family, how big our family is. And it's through Jesus Christ that has happened. So yeah, I think that we need to keep all of that together because on the one hand, we don't want to make it sound like following Jesus is just, a tiptoe through the tulips. It is challenging. It is challenging. But on the other hand, we don't want to forget that it's going to be so worth it if you will do it. And that's what we learned by imitating Jesus himself. All right, so what I wanted to do today was just kind of get you to thinking about what it means all these times that Jesus says, follow me. What we'll do then on, I guess it won't be Sunday or Wednesday, I guess it'll be, a week Sunday, right? Is then we're going to shift now and we'll look at some of the discipleship passages because they will blend right in with what we've talked about tonight. Okay, thank you all, everybody. Thanks. Great comments and suggestions tonight. Has the second bell rung yet? You fixing to? Okay. There we go.